Welcome to the Hermes Investment Podcast, bringing you up-to-date views from our team.
Hi, in this Hermes podcast, we ask, why is the analysis of environmental, social and governance risk, or ESG risk as it's known, important for fixed income investors? You're with Simon Mumm, Director of Content at Hermes Investment Management. ESG investing is an established practice in equity markets, where shareholders can exercise voting rights and engage companies on sustainability concerns. But what power do bondholders or investors in loans or derivatives have to influence companies? And why is it of interest to creditors who are primarily concerned with being paid back to see companies manage ESG risk? To answer these questions, I've got Mitch Resnick, co-head of credit at Hermes Investment Management, with me today. Mitch heads up the research efforts of our liquid credit strategies and is into his ninth year at Hermes. Mitch, can you introduce the concept of ESG risk and why it's important in a broad investment sense?
Thanks, Simon. First of all, let me begin with by saying that there's no single definition of ESG risks. That there's been a lot of navel gazing and thinking about what these mean. We're beginning to converge around some basic principles that I think are well described by the PRI. But effectively, what we're talking about are these non-financial risks associated with the company behavior. They're broken down into three broad categories: environmental, social, and governance. With environment covering a company's impact on the environment, how its its energy efficiency, its greenhouse gas emissions, these types of things. On the social side, what we're looking at is the company's impact on its employees, the workers' well-being, and how well it's treating its customers. From a governance point of view, it's a bit broader, but it's really about how the company is managing its business for the long term. Is it managing, what is the board composition say about how they think as a company? What is the financial policy? Are they balancing all stakeholders, whether they're employees, customers, equity holders, or creditors? Are they balancing that well? How are they managing for the future? All three of those rolled up together are very important. What we look at is for the materiality of those factors and what they say about the probable impact of the company's performance going forward. Because the reality is that these non-financial factors, these ESG behaviors, are inexorably linked to the fortunes of a company.
Is it a case of, when you're analyzing a company and you see that it has a poor or a negative environmental impact, that you will avoid that company? Is it about excluding certain companies from your portfolio?
Only insofar as we believe that those behaviors will impact cash flows and therefore enterprise value. For example, if we see a company that is scoring poorly from an ESG point of view, say from the assessment services like MSCI, or they score poorly from in our own Hermes proprietary framework called QESG or quantitative ESG scores, if we see companies that score poorly, those for us are important, but they're static. What's important for us is the company showing an earnest willingness to improve on those factors? If so, then for us, that's an investment opportunity. On the other side, if we see that there's absolutely no hope at all on these ESG factors and they're material, then for us, that is an opportunity to avoid. So for us, it's sort of both sides. This isn't about exclusion companies that score a certain level. It would be like investing in credit based purely on credit ratings, and no one does that. And we wouldn't do that in terms of ESG integration as well.
Why does ESG risk matter for fixed income investors? For equity investors, poor ESG risk can damage reputations and damage operations and result in a decline in the share price. But as a credit investor, you're primarily concerned with being paid back. You mentioned that poor ESG risk can impact cash flows, but can you sort of unpack that a bit further?
Sure. It's a fallacy to think that credit investors or fixed income investors in general don't have an interest in ESG factors. The reality is that insofar as the ESG factors have an impact on cash flows, they have an impact on enterprise value. And enterprise value is irrevocably linked to credit risk. So obviously, we have an interest in companies that show either, good or improving ESG factors. These will, above all, what this is all about is performance. And moving in the right direction on ESG behaviors can improve companies' operations and therefore credit spreads and ultimately performance for our investors, which is the primary motive here.
You said something interesting before where you said if a company's ESG risks are perhaps not, or they could be improved, but they are earnest in improving what they're doing, then you see that as a positive. Is there, do you, as an investor, do you see opportunities to work with companies on helping them to improve ESG risk?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the key thing here is, how on earth would you have any idea if a company is earnestly trying to prove its ESG behaviors? And the only way really to do that is to have conversations with the company itself. And, you know, Hermes has a, you know, has a unique set of resources aside from the responsibility team and the QSG scores that we generate. You know, we work very closely with the equity ownership services team that engage with companies on these specific issues, set goals, and track them through the achieving those goals. You know, and aside from that, you know, the analysts themselves and the credit research team are speaking to companies about these same issues where we don't have, you know, where our equity ownership services team isn't talking to the companies specifically. The bottom line is that companies can put sustainability reports on their websites. They can talk about these things. The key thing is to discuss with them and look for those goals that they've achieved, landmarks that they've made, and moving in the right direction. That signaling is very, very important, and it has to go beyond rhetoric.
Mm. Do you see, in this sense, do you see ESG analysis as an extension of fundamental research?
Absolutely. You know, no. I mean, for us, you know, as I mentioned just a moment ago, in Hermes Credit, the analyst team is assessing and pricing operating risk, financial risk, and ESG risk. For us, it is inexorably linked. There's no real separation, you know, and by, you know, carving out the ESG component itself, it forces us to have those discussions. And we will make investment decisions or amend or, you know, assign scores and final investment scores based on the materiality of an ESG behavior or the probability of an ESG behavior triggering some sort of enterprise value event, just as we would operating risk or financial risk. Look, you know, if the ESG factors are not material, then it won't dominate the investment decision. But if we see that as being a material factor in driving the fortunes of the company, then it will absolutely impact our investment decision. And again, it could be for the positive as much as it is for the negative.
How can something like environmental degradation or poor corporate governance be priced in the same way that operating risk is priced?
Well, look, that's the challenge here, right? I mean, we have now substantial information in the analysis of these non-financial factors. We've got all sorts of third-party services. We're doing a ton of work in-house. We've got full integration in our own investment process to do the analytical work. Our credit analysts are analyzing these topics because, as I said, they're inexorably linked. But, you know, there is, you know, I don't know how many years or decades of intellectual capital that has been thrown at trying to price operating risk and financial risk. There's been very little that's been done on the ESG front. And why is that? Because it's difficult to establish KPIs, quantitative numbers. I mean, you know, these are non-financial behaviors. We are, you know, I think there is, you know, SASB and others are working to improve financial disclosure. So I think over time this will get better. But the reality is that, you know, we need to do that ourselves. And so we at Hermes became very frustrated in credit committee that we weren't able to price non-financial risks in the same way that we could price operating and financial risks. But we did, however, through a collaboration with a couple of teams at Hermes, we did create a credit curve based on ESG risk that gives us at least a sense of how to price these non-financial factors. You know, an ESG value scale that effectively will normalize valuations between companies that have different ESG behaviors and different ESG paths.
And how long have you been using this curve?
Well, we launched this about a year ago, and we think it's a first but not complete step in where we want to achieve, where we want to go with this. You know, I think it's sort of, you know, first and very pioneering, but there's a lot more that we can do in that regard.
And what has been the consistency of its results?
I think, you know, what we've seen is that consistently that credit ratings are essential and they are good, but they don't fully capture ESG risks. So, for example, you could see companies with similar credit ratings but completely different ESG scores. And so for us, that's a key factor in thinking, okay, well, there are different ESG scores. They're like for like in credit rating, relatively like for like in values, but we see these different ESG scores. Let's go investigate. Let's understand this. Let's talk to the company. Let's find out what's going on. And that can have an impact on an investment decision.
So you're finding sort of a pocket of information that otherwise isn't being captured by the credit rating.
Correct.
Okay. So in that case, in those instances, have you identified material risks or opportunities that you would not have otherwise identified?
So let's take, last year we did a gaming industry review and our analyst was looking at the gaming names, and one of them that popped out for us as being, you know, not the strongest credit, but decent valuation and very weak governance score. It was Wynn Gaming, Wynn Casinos out of the U.S. We looked at that one and we thought, you know, based on the discussion with the analysts and the presentation of credit committee, that the materiality of the governance factors dominated the value side. So we stayed away from that name. And I think we're always going to get, you know, not always, but we'll get from time to time these kind of false positives. Maybe Wynn would have been fine. Maybe nothing would have happened.
So that leads me to the next question. So does, as you're looking, using this curve and you're looking at ESG risk in more detail across the markets, and you are a global credit investor, how does ESG risk vary by sector and geography? Are there any broad trends?
Yeah, I mean, I think we are investing on a global basis. And increasingly, the credit markets have become more global for various reasons. Disintermediation of credit, because banks have withdrawn from the market a little bit. That's you know, forced companies, particularly in emerging markets, to come to the credit markets. As such, they are having to conform to the norms of the global credit markets, which means these kinds of demands on, you know, disclosure, behaviors, worker safety, environment into impact, and how that could eventually impact cash flows through your own business, avoiding, you know, the prospect of accidents and these kinds of things. So we think that you know, that will improve over time global corporate behavior from hard currency debt issued into global capital markets. So having said that, you know, we've seen that there are governance issues in developed market companies as well. I mean, look what's happened in Germany. There's quite a lot of work that needs to be done there. And we think with our engagement, things are beginning to improve. As far as sectors go, look, the reality is, you know, governance is always going to be the most important, right? Because if you have poor governance, you're not thinking strategically, you're not thinking about the sustainability of your business, then that's going to have an impact on the other factors as well, social and environmental. Having said that, as you can expect, as you'd expect in the basic industries or the energy industries that have a big impact on the environment, the environmental assessments there are very important. You know, particularly in the energy space. And when you talk about social, that of course is going to have be an important factor in an environmental, in basic materials companies. You can think of, you know, mining and extraction of natural resource, but also in retail. What does your value chain look like? Your production chain look like? Are you taking care of your employees? Are you making sure that they have good housing? Are you making sure that they're working in a safe environment? If they are, the production for you is going to be much better. And by the way, you know, for us, we will have delivered into holistic returns by doing better by society, better by our investors, and better for the company, as we would hope that it would have a reduced weighted average cost of capital.
Mm. And for the listeners here, holistic returns is Hermes' philosophy of delivering financial outperformance, but as well as investing in companies that deliver a broader return to society and the environment. Mitch, shareholders have voting rights and they can therefore hold companies to account. Credit investors have no such recourse. Do companies listen to you when you talk to them about your views on ESG risk?
You know, it's such a fallacy to think that only equity holders have a voice. I mean, the reality is that companies operating in global credit markets are 100% relying on those debt capital markets I touched upon that earlier. We've seen the withdrawal of bank credit, and therefore that vacuum has been filled by the global credit markets themselves. If you are reliant on creditors to provide as a source of capital, then you need to pay attention to what we're saying. And I think that they are. I think that, you know, in some cases companies don't realize that we care about these ESG factors as much as anyone else. I mean, we may not be able to vote with shares, but we can certainly vote with credit spread and price and access. And that's going to be important because that affects weighted average cost of capital and shareholder returns over time. So, I think you do speak with a greater voice if you're already an investor. Companies will tend to listen to you. Their ears will tend to perk up if you are already invested in the company itself. But yes, we have we care, as I said before, and we're stakeholders, just like employees, society, and shareholders, and it's important to us.
Investors and markets are often criticized for being short-term and focused on quarterly results. When you raise ESG risks with company or ESG concerns, do they welcome these discussions? Because these are genuinely more long-term in nature and probably more and relate to their long-term strategy.
Not always. There are some companies that think they're just fine, and we take that into consideration and make an investment decision based on where we see spreads at a given time. But we're finding more and more that companies are more receptive and they do understand that, you know, what does sustainability mean in a sustainable business? It means that you don't forsake your future production and your future performance by doing something short term. And this is where I think there is quite a lot of alignment between shareholders and creditors. You know, as such, the valuations of securities in the short term and the near term are going to be affected by what you're doing in the long term. So the two are irrevocably linked, in my view. You know, I think a sudden change in financial policy to significantly lever up the company to get a share price boost, I don't think that's really in the interest of shareholders, you know, real investors in the long term. And we certainly wouldn't see it that way either. So, I think that, they most listen. And if they don't, then we can make our investment decisions.
It's becoming a growing regulatory requirement, particularly in Europe, for asset owners to factor ESG analysis into their investment decisions and to prove this. Do you think ESG analysis will become a legal requirement for asset managers, including fixed income managers?
There is no going back on ESG integration. The cement has been poured on this concept and it's dried and it's drying and we're pouring more layers on. The European Commission just issued a proposal for lawmaking on May 24th. You know, the purpose of which was to aim to integrate ESG considerations into the investment process. That is the aim, in a sentence, of this proposal. So we've seen, you know, France lead the way in Europe, and Europe, in a way, leading the way across the world. But as I meet with investors and I meet with companies on a global basis, you can see that everyone is on the curve. We're just in a different place, and there is no going back. And I do think that we will see it at a minimum. In principle, the rules will form around this, and regulators have a place for that. You know, some of it might be top down, for example, maybe in Asia. Some of it's going to be bottom up, combined with the top down, as we're seeing in Europe, and in the U.S. It remains to be seen. But we really are only going in one direction, and there's no going back. This is the future. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned before that you have more work to do in how you price ESG risk. Where do you see your future research efforts in honing your analysis of ESG research?
Well, there are a couple more things I'd like to do. One is, we ran the same study that we did last year again this year. We're going to do it on an annual basis to see how that trend is. The result was that the result of that test was that there was even more, that the explanatory power was even stronger. But the shape of the curve was a little bit different. Having said that, the basis or the difference between the widest spreads and the lowest spreads, the difference in spread between the highest scores and the lowest scores was a little bit wider, reinforcing this relationship exists. The second thing is, we'd like to do a total return analysis. We know that others have been done, but we think that there's some problems and flaws in some of those. It's difficult with bonds because effectively bond math gets in the way. You've got maturities, convexity, and all these kinds, duration, these kinds of concepts. But I think that there's more that we can do on that front.
To finish with, can you walk me through sort of a compelling case study of ESG analysis and where it is you've found it has been the difference between investing and not investing in a company?
Well, I think there are several. A great example for us. I mean, I mentioned wind just a moment ago. I think that was a risk management. Let's talk about something where we've invested even more as we've engaged with the company Pemex. We talked about do companies care about the bond market when we talk about these things? Do creditors have a voice in this? Pemex is 100% owned by the Mexican state. It has no public equity. At the same time, it has nearly $100 billion of debt outstanding. They are reliant on the debt capital markets. We, over a year ago, they'd issued a bond in Europe. We bought a little bit on good value, and we assigned an ESG score at the time. I think it was four. We assigned an ESG score. Then we combined efforts with the equity ownership services business and combined with an analyst there, and we held several meetings over the past 12 to 15 months. As we've grown increasingly confident in their desire and their earnestness with which they seek to improve these ESG behaviors, we've invested more, we've improved the internal ESG score that we have. The credit analyst did that. And by the way, there's also the added benefit of that when you engage speaking with the company on these ESG issues, you have the ability to better understand, to enter dialogue about other issues as well relating to operating risk and financial risk. So that's, we've gained more comfort around that. And that's where, the spreads have done extremely well. We've seen them outperform, and we think the two are related.
That's excellent, Mitch. Thanks for your time and sharing your insights with us today.
Pleasure. Thank you, Simon.
Thank you for listening to the Hermes podcast. If you found it interesting and would like to listen to more podcasts by Hermes, please visit our website, hermes-investment.com, and search for podcasts. These podcasts are for information purposes only, and the views, information, or opinions expressed therein are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Hermes Investment Management and its employees. Performance should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. All the performance represented is historical. Past performance is not a reliable indicator of future results, and investors may not recover the full amount invested.